Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Wing and Tail Boys podcast, your Northeast hunting and fishing destination. I'm Chris.
And I'm Angelo.
And we're your hosts. Join us as we navigate the woods and waters of the Northeast, sharing our passion for the outdoors.
Whether it's land management, outdoor recreation, hunting, or fishing, we're going to cover it all. With 40 plus years of experience in the Northeast, we'll provide insights, tips, and stories to help you make the most of your adventures and help you experience the wild.
So, tune in, grab your gear, and let's hit the woods together. And always remember, success is just a commitment away. What's going on, guys? Thanks for joining us here for another episode of the Wing and Tail Boys podcast, where success is always just a commitment away. On today's episode, we are bringing Ben Coleman back for part 2 of our conversation. Our last conversation, we kind of talked about his upbringing and how he got into deer hunting and just hunting in general, and how he went from South Carolina to Colorado to Texas, and how he was able to bring things with him along the way, but how things were also so different from one place to the other, and how he used his experiences along the way to kind of mold that. And today's episode dives into some different aspects of hunting, as well as some exciting things that have come up in the last week or two for Ben as far as his music is concerned. We talk a little bit about this radio tour that he's doing for his new radio single. And then we dive specifically into some deer hunting tactics and turkey tactics that he has picked up along the way as he has bounced from state to state. And he talks about what's worked in multiple different places, what hasn't worked in different places, some things that, you know, having the harder beginnings as far as hunting is concerned, how that helped shape him into a more successful hunter today, where he's able to hunt places that have more deer and have more opportunities to hunt deer that do deer things. Before we get into this week's episode, I just want to update you guys on some things that we have going on here at Wing and in the Wing and Tail Boys podcast, as well as Wing and Tail Outdoors. We are still working on that website. Hopefully that is going to be done here sometime soon. I'm looking to get certified here in something. And once I do, I'm going to share some really exciting news with you guys. I know I've said that a couple of weeks in a row now, but it's coming. Every week it gets closer and closer. I just need to make sure all my ducks are in a row before I share that with you guys. So I'm really, really excited to close that up, finish that up, and get that information to you. Lastly, I want to give a big shout out to Vitalize Seed once again for partnering up with this podcast. I want to thank you so much for your support and your efforts that you're doing out there. They're releasing some really great content on their Instagram page at this time. And they're talking a lot about things that you could do right now, both food plotting and in the timber stand, to help you set yourself up for success both this upcoming hunting season and in the future seasons to come. If you are a food plotter, I strongly suggest that you go over to Vitalize Seed and check out their selection of seed. What I love about their product line is they've made it very simple. They have their 1-2 punch. They have their nitro boost that you plant in the summer. They have their carbon load that you plant in the fall. And together they work as a 1-2 punch to create the perfect balance of carbon and nitrogen to help your soil turn over nutrients as often as possible and as quickly as possible. Now, if you're like me and you don't have a long growing season, your summers just aren't long enough to plant a true summer blend, they have something for you too. Just go over there, check out their clover mix, their premium clover mix, and their clover plus mix. Both mixes are fantastic. They will help you to restore your nitrogen deposits in your soil while giving the deer and the wildlife something to eat now in preparation for the season. So again, I want to thank you guys for joining us for this week's episode. And without further ado, here's Ben Coleman. Hey, how are we doing, guys? We are joined today by Nigel Thornberry. The Thornberries.
I don't even know who that is.
Are you kidding me?
I don't know who it is.
Dude, did you watch Nickelodeon growing up? Oh my God. Never mind then. There was a show on Nickelodeon growing up, and it was called The Wild Thornberries. And they were like this Australian family that lived like in their trailer or whatever, their mobile trailer. And they kind of just like drove around and like did like the safari thing. And they were just a family. And the father was Nigel Thornberry, and he was like the leader of the pack.
I love that. He's like Steve Irwin, Don Family. He's like Little House on the Prairie of Australia.
Right. And Nickelodeon at and the Nickelodeon. Same time.
Sounds fantastic.
Well, I tried to open up with a joke, but that kind of went south. You know, it's not really funny when you got to explain it. But we are joined again today by Ben Coleman. Joined us a couple of weeks ago. We had you on, and we kind of talked about your background. You know, came from South Carolina, hit up Colorado for a few years, went down to Texas, and kind of been doing the music thing along the way. So if you guys didn't catch that first episode, definitely go back and take a listen. We had a really good time recording that one. But welcome back, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing awesome, man. I know we both had our bouts with the sickness, but it feels good to be healthy again. Like I told you, I was excited when I was like, oh yeah, we get to do podcast tonight and talk about huntings.
Yeah.
I'm good, man. I'm great.
There you go. And it looks like it's beautiful there. I mean, today, as we record this, it's Tuesday, March 18th. For once, this is probably going to air tomorrow, to be honest with you. Cool. Keep like the two episodes as close together as possible. But today is like the second truly beautiful day that there's been. It's like actually spring. There's a little bit of a breeze. There's still a little crisp chill in the air, but like the sun is warming. It's like, it's the perfect afternoon.
Turkey season is in the air when it's like that.
That's what I'm saying. I'm hoping. I actually picked up my very first mouth call ever today. I've never used a turkey call. It took me like a good 15, 20 minutes just to figure out how to get it to make sound.
Yep.
And I've been literally messing around with it all day long. And I finally got it to make like soft, like little like cluck, cluck, like little clucks, you know, which I don't even know what I'm doing. I don't even know how to string them together, but I think we're just going to go in the woods this year I'm just trying it out for the first time.
Hey, if you find the right bird, that's all it takes.
That's what I hear. And I'm watching these videos on YouTube, and like some of these guys are, they're calling just like I sounded in my kitchen, and they're shooting bird after bird after bird, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah. If you suck at calling, call less, you know, and it's the word.
And what everyone I keep listening to keeps saying is, if you can get a gobbler to call back, throw your call as far away from you as possible and just let it come in.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it is good to do a little misdirection with the, you know, the direction you're doing your call. Sound yeah, far
like,
away.
Like a little rudder. So for those of you who are not watching this on YouTube, let me give you a little background for that joke I opened up with. Ben's coming from the road, and he's in his car today. And he's had a pretty big, he's had a pretty eventful week or two. And since our last recording, you had your first radio single hit like the Airstream, and it's been kind of taken off. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah, man. Thank you. Yeah. I had my first radio single hit the radio. It's called Rainy Days. And, so I'm on the road now doing a little radio station tour. And so just going to different radio stations around Texas and showing up and getting on air with them, playing my song, kind of just chopping it up a little bit. It's been a good time. Today's the first day of that. And so first day in like a radio station, you know, talking to DJs and getting in there a little bit. It was fun.
What was it like getting behind the scenes, like in the studio? Because you always see like, you know, the movies and stuff. Like, what was it actually like?
Yeah. I would say they were very much like, I was surprised, like the energy when you walked in the door. Because, I mean, their job is to create energy, I guess, on the radio. So like they all seemed to have that energy when I walked in. I was like, oh, you know. Upbeat, you know, laughing, cutting jokes. It was good. Yeah.
Did you get to play the song live at all? Did they give you an opportunity to actually play it?
Yeah, I did. I played it acoustic, and another one of my songs. And then I'll be honest, like it was the first time I heard my song live on the radio. Even though it's been out for I guess a week and a half or something, but I just haven't caught it at the right time it's on. And I've heard the song a million times, so it's not like. You know, but it was today. I was like, oh, that's the first time I've heard it. Like my ears, my song on the radio. It's very, very cool.
That's awesome, man. Congratulations. Do you have any more of these lined up? Are you doing more of these radio interviews? Like what?
Yeah.
Has it left like, Texas yet?
Not the song I'm told will be in or is in a couple other states and will definitely be in more. But I'll do. So it's like, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I'll hit up like three radio stations a day. And just like be driving one to the next, and they've got like a dates lined up for me, timing, like, hey, you're, you know, hour and a half from here, show up, boom, knock the interview out, drive to the next one.
All right.
It's fun. Like, I like it. I got up early this morning, really early, and was like, kind of treated it like hunting, you know, in my mindset. I'm like, okay, like I get up early for hunting, getting up early for this. Just kind of felt like an adventure, you know?
All right. No, that sounds exciting. We wish you the best of luck with that. Do you have any plans on the next single coming out? Do you have anything?
Yeah,
works or what?
Oh yeah. So last year I got 8 songs in the can, meaning they're mixed and mastered, they're ready, but nobody's heard them yet. So this year's like creating content to release them, you know.
All right.
It's not the fun part. The fun part is writing and recording, but now I've got to, you know, do photo shoots, video shoots, that kind of stuff, so that when you get the song out, you kind of have some content put around it.
Right. Yeah,
so make it. So I should have like 8 songs out this year throughout the year.
Oh, really? So 2025 is going to be a big year for you, man.
It's going to be a lot of new music being put out. Yes, sir.
All right. Well, you're going to find the time to hunt still or what?
Yes. Yes. You asked me a very hard question in the last interview and I answered honestly.
All right.
You asked me if I had to give up hunting or music, which one?
Yeah. I remember.
And I stand by what I said. I had some time to think about it too. Cause I was like, oh, that just felt so weird. Even like,
admitting it
until you go there, but yeah, man, can't give up hunting. Like I think it's like even more primal. Well, music's primal. That's the hard part. It's like you could say both things about both, but I can't give up hunting, man, because it's like a survival type of instinct for me, almost. You know, kill it, eat it, and go out there and live that circle of life. You know.
Yeah, and you know what else there is to it too, which music doesn't quite have. There's the chess game. The cat and mouse, the prey and the predator. You know what I mean? Like there, you don't have that with music. You know, there's the adventure in music. You know, like you have this idea in your head and you're not quite sure how to get it on paper or how to get it, you know, to come out of your instrument. Mm-hmm. But when you get into the woods, you have the under, like everything around you has the upper hand. They could see better than you. They could hear better than you. They could run faster than you. They could smell better than you. They could do everything better than you,
yeah,
except create stuff. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's like, that's what does it. That's what does it for me is knowing that it's like, even the smallest deer, the biggest deer, even the smallest bass, like you have to fool an animal in their element. That to me is.
That is 100%. Epic. I didn't think about that. But dude, you've been sending me some of your music recordings and you are good. Like, I know this.
Oh,
like,
stop.
You're good, dude. Like your voice, your guitar, like, damn, dude. So I want to hear you. You gotta like create something for the intro here. That's you.
All right. You know what? I might have to take on the challenge then.
Yeah,
dude,
yeah.
It's been a minute. It's been a minute since I've made music. That was like all I did in college. I'd like hole up in like my bedroom or whatever. All good. I used to like hole up in my bedroom or whatever, and just, you know, I'd lock myself up. I'd take the dog out a couple times, and I would just play for hours on end. And that, you know, a lot of good stuff came out of that at you know, back in the day.
Well, so that's, you're really, you know, talented, so don't put that one to rest.
All right. I appreciate that. Maybe we'll have to get together and do something.
Oh yeah,
maybe that's the trick here. So you're on the road, so you can't join me in a drink today, and I'm out of beer, unfortunately. But I'm enjoying. So my brother-in-law brought this this like blended flavored whiskey when he came to help us with our put our floors in, and I wasn't sure how I was gonna feel about it. It's like Magic Hat or something like that. It's called, and it's got chocolate and like peanut butter. It's like a chocolate peanut butter whiskey. Now, I'm not usually a fan of drinking my whiskey straight, but this stuff goes down like pure butter. It's like a Reese's peanut butter cup in a glass.
Comes like a mixed drink all by itself.
100%.
See, if you hadn't told on me and I had a good background, I do actually have some beer on.
Oh,
because I'm a prepared man, but no, I can't partake because I am in the vehicle.
I blew up your spot. I don't know about Texas, but you know, a lot of other states, if you just pull the key out of the ignition, you're usually in the clear. But I'm kidding. I do not condone drinking and driving. I'm absolutely kidding.
Me neither. Totally not.
So what I wanted to try to do today is kind of talk to you about the differences in hunting the three states. So I know you've hunted South Carolina. Obviously, that's where you grew up. You've hunted Colorado, elk primarily, if I'm not mistaken. And then down in Texas, you've kind of done the turkey thing, the deer thing, the hog thing, and, you know, anything else you can kind of shoot an arrow at. So what I was hoping to do is kind of get an idea of what you prefer to hunt in each state, because I have a feeling your answer might be different for each state.
Yeah,
and then, you know, maybe talk to you a little bit about your tactics for each of those and what it was like hunting in the different states. You know, we won't get too in depth. But you know, next episode, if you want to join us again, we can, you know, maybe hone in on, you know, say deer tactics or turkey tactics. But I'm interested in knowing, because South Carolina is very similar to where I grew up. You have some mountains, but they're not like mountains. You know what I mean? Like you have, so I'm assuming your hunting down there would have been similar to the way I grew up, but I'm curious to hear. So we can start wherever you want with whatever game you want. Take it away.
Yeah. I guess let's start with bread and butter. So South Carolina deer hunting is like where I cut my chops on hunting and archery hunting. And I did the private land thing. We talked about that last time, and mm-hmm. I, all those formative years, but definitely not my biggest like learning experiences. I don't feel like I learned truly how to hunt deer until I started getting out there on public land. And, you know, I moved to Colorado and I got into archery elk hunting on public land. And that kind of opened my eyes when I moved back to South Carolina to like start adventuring on public land, and like, and then the advantages to having so much land to hunt deer on, and then how to go about chopping up a big piece of land to find deer. And then, you know, with bow hunting, you've got to put yourself in the spot, on the spot, not just like somewhere in the vicinity where you could see a, you know, buck go by at 150 yards and knock it down. So public land's really where I was like honing in how to hunt deer well. And that's where I feel like I got my skills advanced. But you know, I was in South Carolina for about 3 years of public land hunting, and South Carolina is a brutally terrible public land hunting state to go hunt on. Like,
why is that?
It's because they hunt with a rifle for 4 months of the year.
Really?
And in
that
some
long?
In some counties, it's like August through part of January. and there's no break for the deer. It's just all out war with guns everywhere. Like there's no, the gun season is 4 months long.
That's completely opposite of
December. Wait. Yeah. So 5 months, some counties.
That's completely opposite of how I grew up, dude. Like New Jersey, there was no rifle hunting at all. You can't rifle in Jersey. It was just 6 day shotgun. We got literally 6 days to hunt shotgun Monday through Saturday. And then maybe 15-ish total days to hunt muzzleloader. And they were like spread out. So it was like Monday, Tuesday, then a Saturday. And then it would like open up or something like that. So like, that's crazy.
Guaranteed you guys, you know, grew bigger deer because of that. And there's no antler restrictions in South Carolina, and not even in any of the counties that I know about. There might be like a parcel here or there that's like 500 acres of bow only, but it's not, you know, it's not enough to make a difference in like, oh, we can go here and find really good deer that are living. No, it is an all out war for 5 months of the year on deer. So half the year they are just pressured and there's not many of them. People, you know, the culture is like, if it's brown, it's down for the most part. And so the hunting quality is just not there. So that brings me to transitioning to hunt in Texas, where, you know, I got my cousins here. They're some of my best friends, and we both are obsessed with archery, public land hunting. So I started traveling out here to hunt with them. And man, the quality of deer hunting just was 10 times better than where I had previously been hunting. You know, I came out here my first trip, 5 days. I shot like a nice 3.5-year-old buck, and I was just like, I'm hooked. This is amazing just to get access to better quality hunting. I mean, I'm sure it's better in Iowa, but for me, it was like
a world of a difference.
A world of a difference. And so now I live out here and I get to hunt out here and have really good access to deer that are, you know, there's a antler restriction. It's bow only where I hunt. So it's quality deer hunting. So, you know, if you are going to hunt deer and get better at it, you need to be somewhere where there are deer, and you're going to have better deer hunting experiences if you're not hunting this crazily pressured with rifle area. That's the first thing I'll say to kind of set the stage.
Okay.
Once I got to, go ahead.
When you, starting off the way you did, hunting in a state that was heavily pressured, not a lot of deer to go around. We all know that as deer get a little bit more mature, when they get into that, you know, 3.5, 4.5, 5.5-year-old range, you start to have more luck with the calling. You're able to implement more tactics because deer are acting like how they're supposed to. In a sense, you know what I mean? So what was it like going from where that didn't work to somewhere where it did, versus what you're recommending is, you know, go somewhere where there are the deer if you're going to learn how to hunt better? You had kind of like the opposite start. So how did that work for you? If you're anything like me, you love to customize your bow while always making sure everything is just spot on. That's why I trust Anthony and Chris over at Big D Custom Pro Shop. They're located on Route 15 in Lake Pacon, New Jersey, and they have everything you need to tune your bow. And I promise you, you're going to leave there with a smile on your face. So, if you live in northern New Jersey, give my boy Big D a shout for all your archery needs. When I head out to the woods, I have to know that I have the best performing equipment that I can afford. So that way, I'm the only variable that I have to worry about. That's why I trust FireKnock products for all my arrow and bow accessory needs. From arrow components to bow accessories like stabilizers and arrow rests, they have what you need. Dorge won't put anything on the market if it doesn't perform 50% better than what's already out there. So head on over to FireKnock.com today to see what they're all about.
Yeah, well, I mean, thankfully I was obsessed with it enough to like just go hard at it even where it was terrible. And try everything that I could possibly pick up in podcasts. And I was really cautious about ground scent, about, obviously you should always be cautious about wind, but I was, you know, overly cautious about not pushing, you know, pressuring the deer too hard. And then when I got to Texas, it was like, you kind of breathe up a little bit and be like, okay, not every mistake you do is going to send the deer, you know, into the next county. And it got a little bit more like, just you could see them and hunt them and see, have enough encounters to learn about them more. So I'm trying to, did I kind of started to answer the question and I got sidetracked.
Sure. I mean, you're saying you had enough success in those tougher areas to feel like you could
I know what I was
figure it out.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, once I, so I had all these things I learned from hunting podcasts and my own experiences, that once I put them to the test in an area that actually had deer and had deer doing deer things, like, they started working, you know? Whereas in South Carolina, it was just like, they're so pressured that it wasn't even giving it a fair shot. So, like, calling, like, I can rattle and a buck shows up, and I can grunt and a buck shows up. I, you know, it's like these things started working because I was in deer areas where deer are doing deer things. Mm-hmm. And it felt good because it's like, okay, we're starting to have some success and these tactics do work. And, you know, deer do visit scrapes in daylight, and, you know, all these things you learn about, you know, whether a deer showing up to a scrape after a rain or whatever it may be, it's like you start seeing those things in the woods because you're actually where deer are doing deer things. And that might be, I mean, that might take you walking an extra half mile, you know, where you are or wherever the listener's at, but just go where deer are at least a little bit less pressured. So they feel comfortable to do deer things.
I gotcha. Now, there's a two-part question, same question, just from two different ends. Give me something that you thought would work, that when you went to Texas or a place that had more deer, that it did work. And you were like, oh my goodness, it actually works. And then the flip side of that, something where you were misconstrued and you were like, man, this would definitely work if the hunting was better. And then you got to Texas and it worked just as poorly as it did in South Carolina.
That's a great question. Easy answer for the first part is rattling. So, like, there's still a time and a place to rattle and not to rattle, but, like, rattling has rattled me in quite a few shooters, and it's so fun. I don't use it every hunt personally, but so that would be answer to number one. Number two, I don't know. I don't know that I have something off the top of my head that I thought would work and doesn't work, because I was so extremely cautious in South Carolina that, I mean, you know, I just played it. I played it too safe. In fact, if I ever do move back and hunt regularly in South Carolina, I actually plan on being less. I want to apply the same stuff I use here and be a little bit less cautious about, you know, how I pressure a bedding area, hit it a little bit more. Like, don't be afraid to run the buck out type of right.
Aggressive, get more aggressive than you used to be back in the day.
Get aggressive, find the best sign and just hunt it. And if you know, find where I see deer regularly, find the buck sign, get in there. Don't worry about, like, I wouldn't hunt the same spot for, like, a minimum of a week. I'd wait a week before I'd hunt even the same, like, parcel, which I think was overkill.
Sure.
Now, when I go back, I'll be like, I still don't like to hunt the same tree ever, unless it's, like, maybe 2 weeks apart as far as the same tree. But I definitely plan on being like, hey, if I see deer in there, I'm going to go back there the next day and set up where I saw the buck, you know? Like, sure. I would do here.
Now, are there times of the year where you're more weary about things than others? Like, I know some people will say if it's in the rut, you can get away with a little bit more. If you know that that's the tree you need to be in. Because you said at the beginning, with bow hunting, you have to get on the spot. It's not getting in the vicinity. It's not be able to shoot out to the spot. It's you need to be on the X, right? So
times of the year that I would be less is definitely during the rut. I'll be less worried about it, you know, especially mm-hmm. if I'm like, oh, there's a hot doe, there's a buck chasing it, like, I need to hunt here tonight and tomorrow morning, you know, maybe I'll set up 90 yards this way. Whereas other parts of the year, I like to hunt in chunks of, like, you know, 3, 4, 7 days where it's like, I'll observe deer activity, I'll back out just long enough where they don't feel like they have to break their pattern for that little week chunk of time. And then I'll go back up and catch, and in my head, I'm like catching them by surprise. And then I hunt the spot on the spot. Or, you know, I get done from a morning hunt. Always like to scout after a morning hunt, do a quick loop, find really good sign, and then come back and hunt it, you know, 3 days later, or maybe even just the next weekend I can get in there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you wait 2 weeks, there's a good chance that won't be the spot on the spot anymore.
Right.
You know, so that's why I kind of hone in every 3 to 5 days.
And that's the tough part. I had a buck that I believe I was on this year. Like, I've always been good at finding deer. Mm-hmm. And what I've been focusing on over the last, I don't know, I would say this past season, maybe the last two seasons, is instead of now just finding deer, I want to get into the fresh sign. I want to find where those bucks are walking, maybe where they're rubbing, maybe some scrapes. Try to figure out the bedding. But I know bedding sometimes can be kind of a crapshoot. especially if all the forest is kind of very similar. So this past year, I felt like I was on this one buck, and there were rubs going both directions, following a stream. I didn't see any sign of anybody else anywhere, and I just couldn't get on him. You know, it was like I was nervous because, like you're saying, that time of year it was October going into November. That time of year, they might be here this week and 2 miles away next week because that's where the doe were last year. You know, so I'm always teetering on this line of, I know I need to scout, but what's too close to going? And do I sit or do I scout? And is it okay to scout today and hang a stand tomorrow? You know, it's like, I'm playing more games in my head than the deer's playing with me.
I totally understand exactly what you're saying. And that's what makes it so rewarding when it comes to fruition. You're like, all these little games and scenarios I've been playing in my head and guessing that the deer are doing, and then it comes to fruition and that buck walks in front of you and you get the deal done. It's like, that's the best feeling ever, because it means that you were right. I mean, sometimes people get lucky, but you know, over the last few years, I feel like as honed in as I am on some of the properties, that it's not an accident. You know, it's usually, It usually comes to fruition. Kind of like the scenario that you go, the reason you put yourself in that tree is the reason you killed the deer. That it feels really good when that happens.
And is that something that I don't think we caught last time. How long have you been in Texas now?
This fall will be my sixth hunting season here. So I'll have five full seasons. Well, three full seasons, two trips worth of data on these places, and combine that with three other people that my cousins and my buddy that hunt it too. And we all share. So you combine that amount of data, and like, now I've got early season spot. Now every chunk of the season, I've got what should be the hot spot for that. And then it just takes boots on the ground, find the fresh sign. Might only be 50 yards, might be 200 yards different from where it was last year. Mm-hmm. But you're like, okay, we're back.
But they're going to be there, but they're still going to be in that same core area.
Yes. That's the beautiful thing about learning a property. And year after year, deer do the same things. And the more you hunt a property, the better you get at hunting it. The more fun hunts you have because you see more deer and kill them.
So what I wanted to get at was, we've talked before about building off of historical data, you know, keeping your old trail camera information, figuring out when the deer are coming through, what stands you need to be at which times of the year. Have you been hunting there? You've hunted there for 5 years now. Have you been there long enough that you've had the same tree produce multiple times? Have you gotten to the point where it's like, all right, you know, I shot a deer out of here 2 years ago, a new one should have taken his place by now, let me go check the spot out?
Yeah, I'd say as far as trees, like where I hunt, a lot of the spots, it might be a tree within 25 yards of the other tree. But yeah, there's definitely spot on the spot places now where it's just a dynamite spot to be in. And so as long as you're within 25 yards of that, depending on the new sign that year, yeah, for sure.
I gotcha. Now what's really cool, and I'm sure you've experienced this before, because anyone who's spent time in the woods long enough has, but it's like you go scouting, you know, you put all this information together, you know, whether you're using Onyx or Spartan Forge or whatever app you're using to like keep track of your data. And, you know, you go home and you you start to analyze the bigger picture, you know, you zoom out and you pick a spot on that map and you're like, okay, this is the spot I need to go to. And then you walk in there and it's lit up and there's sign everywhere. And you look over and there's a 60-year-old wooden stand rotting out of the tree over there, you know, and it's like, they didn't have all the shit we have. They didn't have the podcast. They didn't have the topo, like they had topo maps, but they didn't have the digital stuff for you to go in and do all this e-scouting. And they were able to find whoever they were able to find this spot that produced 60 years ago, whatever it is, you know? So for me, I don't know how you feel about this, but if I just happen to stumble upon a wooden ladder stand, I'm giving that stand a chance. I'm going to set up, you know, I'm going to mark that and I'm going to hunt it because I want to know why someone went through the trouble of carrying all that wood into here. There's got to be a reason.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I've totally seen that so many times, especially, you know, wandering around thousands of acres of public land. 100%. You know, just wander around the 100 yards around it and you'll find a scrape, you know, and you'll be like, that scrape in this area has probably been here for as long as deer have been here.
Decades. You know? Yeah. And that's why, like, honestly, me personally, I take more stock in an old ladder stand that's rotting than a 10-year-old ladder stand metal that somebody put up and just forgot to go and get. You know?
So true. So true.
That's just like, there's just something about that old time wisdom. Like I said, you know, they had to go through, it wasn't just carrying 30 pounds of metal. You know, they were carrying 2x4s and nails and screws and whatever else they needed to, you know, so going through that trouble to put a stand in there.
And it's fun to be for about the conversations they had too, you know, they're like, you know, they planned that day to take all that lumber in there. And they were like, we always see deer here. Like it was visual confirmation. Mm-hmm. Like, it's going to be worth the effort to do all this. So yeah, I completely agree with you.
You know, and now we're going down a little bit of a tangent, but that's okay. Like nowadays you could be in touch with everyone at all times. You know, like my wife knows if I'm safe, if I made it up the tree, if I saw anything, you know, my mom's usually checking in. I'll be texting the other guys that I'm hunting with when I'm in the woods or whatever. But like don't get me wrong, it's great to have that kind of availability. It's also awful to have that kind of availability, but it's like, you know, to give my wife the reassurance that, you know, I'm okay, that I'm safe, or, you know, just to check in every now and then is great. But I feel because of it, we have lost touch with that get away from the hustle and bustle aspect of what hunting, in my opinion, is meant to be, or at least partially is meant to be. You know, like back then you were literally signing off. I'm going in the tree. I should be in there before the sun comes up. I should be home by, you know, if I'm not home by 10 o'clock, maybe then you can start to worry. Yeah. And there was no concern in between. There was nothing. Sometimes I wonder what that was like, to be honest with you.
There's probably a lot of concern from the wife party. Maybe we get to hunt more because of that now.
Maybe.
Man, there's still places I hunt in Texas where like you don't have service, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You sit there on your phone and you like pull up Instagram. You're like, oh, it doesn't load. Oh, this text doesn't go through. Oh, well, screw it. I'll put my phone up.
You know, the first thing I think of, what happens if there's a problem and they can't get me? Yeah. When I see stuff like that, honestly, that might be, for those of you listening who like to get off the grid, those kind of spots might be something for you to check out, because there are people that will look at that and be like, well, there's no service here. Probably not safe. What happens if something happens? You know, so.
All right. I don't worry about it because I like it and I have people I text and they know right where I'm at. Like,
mm-hmm.
You know, I got my hunting buddies that hunt the same spot. They have me on Find My Friends, you know. Truly, it's a safety concern that you should just have somebody know about where you are, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, share your location, GPS. Some like the new Garmins, like, I don't know, they've been out for like 5 or 6 years now. They have the InReach,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, it's programmed to like phones. You can satellite call somebody if there's ever an emergency. You could pre-program like 5 different people to be able to text from it, you know. So even if your phone doesn't have service, you still have a way to like get help if, God forbid, you ever need anything or something ever happens, you know. So now when it comes to deer, if someone is going out to Texas for the first time, they're like, you know what, I want to do it myself. I don't want to pay for an outfitter. I want to find a piece of public land and I want to try to get it done. Let's say they have 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing what you know, you've now been there for 5 years. You've had 5 seasons worth of hunting. Mm-hmm. How would you break it down? Walk us through if you were this person or what you would recommend to this person coming in, what they would do from e-scouting to harvesting.
I think the odds are going to be best in your favor if you're doing archery. You can use a crossbow, so shoot them at 100 yards if you want to. That, my recommendation is you're going to see a lot more deer if you hunt an archery-only place. There are archery-only places. If you want to do the research, you will quickly find them. So I'm not going to go into detail of how you can do that. I'll tell you offline.
Okay.
You know, you would be surprised where deer end up in Texas woods versus maybe other places. So if it's a big parcel, just go walk it. Find sign. Sounds brain dead. Sounds obvious. But if you don't find a lot of sign, just keep walking. Maybe leave that parcel, go to a backup plan. Find sign and then trust the sign. When I say they might be in places that you wouldn't expect from other woods, I grew up thinking it's got to be the thickest stuff. The biggest buck I've ever seen in the woods was in the most open spot, bedded down. And I watched him go to sleep at 85 yards. And I could see in 250 yards in every direction. And I never previously would have guessed deer would be there. But, you know, I've hunted the area before. And I just like, okay, you know, over the course of the years, I find myself here because I always see deer and then big bucks. And so you might be surprised. Just trust the sign where the worn down trails are. And then, man, scrapes are big in Texas. Like, I know they're big everywhere, but like, everything I do is based on scrapes. Like everything I hunt is within the vicinity of scrapes. If you bring cameras with you, put them on scrapes, see what there is to see. and hunt fresh grapes. Like, that is kind of the only ingredients you need, is like, hunt the wind, find the sign, find lots of deer sign, find grapes that are fresh, and hunt those grapes, and you will see deer. And that would be the simplest thing I boil it down to. And I know that sounds like, I've done that in South Carolina a bunch and not had the same success, but here, pretty good odds. Going in deeper, I'd say definitely look at private land, because let's be honest, the best food sources are often on private land. And so get on Google Maps or Google Earth, which has the best satellite imagery, I think, and look at all the property lines around it. Like, there's going to be big property landowners that put their corn feeder right on the edge, and they're going to have a big green field on the edge, and like, go walk those edges and find where the giant trail goes into the private land, and then go in the woods and back up from there, and then find the scrape that will inevitably be there. And you'll probably see a bunch of scrapes, but find the one that's like closer to the main trail, and work it out from there, and make sure you're always hunting the wind, obviously, and make sure your access gives you the best tactics, tactical advantage as possible, and you will have success. Like, I don't like to advertise Texas public land because I hunt here, but, and people think it's bad, but it's not on anybody's radar because only 1% of Texas is public land.
Yeah. Sounds like Iowa.
But 1% of Texas is freaking huge.
1% of Texas is the size of New Jersey. So, you know,
I have 15,000 acres that I love to hunt and have so much fun hunting. So
you gave me a really cool tactic that last time off air that we talked about that I'm going to pull out of you. I'm going to force you to share it. But before that, if someone is looking on, let's say somebody's doing some e-scouting and they're saying, okay, I want to start to narrow down some of these places. They've located, let's say, three different patches of woods that, you know, are within the hotel where they're staying or whatever the case is. And they now want to start to hone in on specific terrain features to go and walk to find scrapes. I don't know if where you are in Texas, if it's flat, if you have some terrain, I don't really know what type of area you're hunting. But if someone is looking on a map, like on one of these, they're doing e-scouting essentially, what are some key features that they could hone in on and be like, okay, I need to go walk this because I'm going to find a scrape. I know you already talked about, you know, edges of food and woods. Mm-hmm. What else would you advise our listeners to check out?
Yeah, I think there's three big terrain features where I hunt. On the bow only properties where I hunt. And they are big creek bottoms. And you always want to walk those. And then within the open woods, there's big lines of like privet thickets, which are just these bushes that have a bunch of green, yaupon or privet. And the deer love to pile up on those, where it's like open all around, like open woods. Like, you can see a pretty long way, but they're all around the privet, and they use that as a terrain feature that they bed near. And the other one, you know, lakes, and fields is actually the other one I want to talk about. Cause like late season, these deer are in the fields. Like the last three deer I killed here have been out of cedar trees in fields.
Just like a lone cedar field in the middle of, like, and a grass field, ag field, grass. Okay.
Everybody's in the woods because they can get their tree stand up there, and I'll like climb up I'll get my saddle. Like, sometimes I'm standing on limbs, but I have my harness around the tree, and I'll be in a cedar tree. We call them cedar nests. They're like our favorite little nuggets to hunt out of. And you can see forever in these fields, but it's head high, you know, like CRP type stuff. Mm-hmm. And those deer are out there like crazy. And you just find a cedar tree that a couple big trails intersect nearby, and you'll see a lot of deer, especially like combined with the other features, like, you know, away from the parking lot, near private, where there's a good food source. You know, you start stacking those features, but keying in on fields, and especially late season, they're thick.
See, I love the evergreen type of trees, you know, those like, you know, the spruces and all that shit. But I also hate them. We have this like love-hate relationship, because it's like, you got to cut a couple branches to be able to like maneuver to make the shot. And like, there's so much cover on each limb that you cut off like two or three or four of them to give yourself a little pocket to sit in. And there's like, you look around, you're like, shit, all my cover is on the ground now, you know, and it's like, you got to hope that they come from behind or whatever, you know, and move in front of you. But I love you touched on compounding features. And for me, that's like the key for me to go out and even check out a spot. It's got to have at least like three different things. Does it have ridges? Does it have a thermal hub? Is it north facing, south facing? Like, what is going on? Are there oaks? What is there water? Is there a saddle? You know, the more of those that I have in one singular spot, that's going to encourage me to go check that out even more. You know, and in a new place like this, you know, this year we talked last time. My listeners have heard this to nauseam at this point, but PA is new for me. And last year, let's face it, I didn't put enough time into the scouting and the figuring stuff out, and I just didn't have a successful year here. So now next year, I got to change that. So my time is going to be even more limited than it was this year, and I got to make it happen. So now I've figured out where the sign is. Now I got to figure out how to get on the deer from the sign, which kind of brings me into what I wanted to bring up that we talked about last time. And I think you just kind of touched on it, how you saw this big deer out in the open and you never thought it would have bedded there. But what is it that led you to go there? I remember, I'm not sure if this is the same deer that we're talking about, but last time we talked, you said that you would park in this one spot and everybody would kind of walk in from this way, mm-hmm. and you would always see deer like further into the woods, but you mm-hmm. couldn't get to them because they'd always like pick you off somehow. Mm-hmm. Is this the same deer that we're talking about?
No.
Okay.
So the pasture field thing happened because you'd be hunting on the edge of the woods and then you'd see the deer on the pasture, you know, because you get up in a tree and you can see couple hundred, 300 yards out in the pasture. And I've seen deer stand up in the middle of them, you know, big rack stands up out of the grass. You're like, mm-hmm. they're out there. And you watch them all day, you know, your whole hunt, you'll see them out in the pasture. So that's what led to like the cedar nests out in the pasture.
Okay.
The other spot you're talking about is access related, where it's like, hey, the wind's coming in from this direction. And everybody who hunts from this parking lot, they're telling every deer in there that they're coming in to hunt. Mm-hmm. But if you take the extra time to walk the extra 25, 35 minutes, the extra mile, then you get to set up and no deer think you are in there because everybody who comes in there in their mind comes from that one direction.
Yeah.
And so as soon as, even if they hunt that morning, if the, you know, the other public land hunters hunt that morning and they leave, those deer are like, oh, cool, they left. And then now they're up and walking around and they don't know that you were ever in there. Because I think deer keep tabs on.
I think so.
Who's there?
I think so. I don't know if they can identify individual people. Although, call me crazy, but if a dog can identify individual person scent, I don't see why a deer wouldn't be able to either. You know, and that's I don't have a background in biology or anything like that, but that's just my, you know, educated speculation.
I totally agree with that. I mean, I don't think they're going to like run from me more than another hunter, but I do think they could be like, that's a different hunter than that hunter, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, if they saw half the shit I do in a tree, they would gather around with some popcorn or something, because that shit gets hilarious sometimes, man.
Just out of bow range.
Dude, I end up doing like these dances in the tree. Like, I guess, like, I hate to say I get bored in a tree. I don't get bored. I get antsy. Yeah. Like, I'm a movement kind of guy. Like, I'm Italian. I talk with my hands. You know what I mean? So it's like, bro, sometimes I'm just like, you know, okay, maybe I should lean this way or maybe I should lean. Yeah, it's just, it's comical sometimes. This past year, I climbed up a tree and it ended up being the best hunt that I had in a long time. But I'm climbing up a tree. My hat falls off. My bow, when I go to pull my bow up, it's going up upside down. So as I'm pulling my bow up, all my arrows are falling out of my quiver. And my fourth stick fell off of my belt as I was climbing up. And it was just like one thing after another, dude. Like, I swear, I wish I had like a third angle set up somewhere. Because if I would have gotten that shit on camera, that would have made like the best blooper reels ever.
And we all have had those moments, dude. There was I was hunting one of those fields that I had in mind last year or the year before. And I get up in the tree, so excited to get up there, perfect morning during the rut. And I get up in my spot and I see movement across the field in another patch of cedars. And I pull my binos up and there's a huge buck standing there 200 yards away. I'm like, this is freaking sweet. Like, starting the hunt, like sunrise is just visible. And I go to put an arrow on my bow because it was just this early in the hunt. Like, I just got harnessed in and mm-hmm. safely situated. I go to put an arrow on my bow and I'm like, my quiver's nowhere to be found. I look down the ground, it's all tall stuff because I'm hunting in that. And long story short, I spent literally, not kidding, 2 hours looking for my arrow quiver in this like 100 square radius where I knew it had to be in this tall, thick grass that I walked through that morning. And like my quiver had kind of come off the bow and fell that deep in the grass. And I found it right in the area I knew it was, should be, but 2 hours, 2 hours. And there was a monster buck across the field. And I'm just down from my stand looking for my stupid, you know, quiver.
So, and how did that play out? Did he disappear out of your life and never to be seen again? Did we call him in a little bit? Like, how did that go now?
I mean, once I climbed down, like I never saw him again that day. Okay. I might've seen him on a different hunt or whatever. It'd be hard to know which buck it was, but
sure.
Yeah. Just this maddening moment.
It's heartbreaking. Cause like, even now, man, I mean, we're in the middle of March. There's not a tree to climb in sight for the next 8 months or whatever it's going to be. Right. And just the other night, I'm sitting there taking sticks apart, you know, greasing up bolts and shit, checking my connections. Like I just installed like a new way to hold my ropes in place. Yeah. So that way it's less for me to do when I get to my tree,
yeah.
You know, and it's like, we spend all this time making sure that we have every T dotted and every I crossed. And then we get into the woods and it's like the most basic shit just goes awry.
But it's those little like mistakes that keep us kind of honed in. Even as we're walking in, we're thinking through a million things to keep our shit just dialed in perfect, you know? And yeah, the goes without saying, the more mistakes you can cut down on, the better your chances are when you're in the stand.
That's what I'm saying. Sometimes I got to remind myself, like, I'm always in a rush. Like, okay, sun's coming up in an hour. I only have an hour to walk to my tree. Mm-hmm. You know, when it's like, I feel like I got to get out of that and just realize that the extra 20, 30 seconds to make sure my ropes aren't tangled before I start climbing, or to make sure that my sticks are attached properly, or to make sure that I'm attaching the damn haul line to the proper side of my bow. You know what I mean? It's like, but then again, I make the mistake once. Hopefully I don't make the same one again.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lesson to be learned in there.
Yeah. 100%. You feel like a fine tuned machine. Like when you're like, I'm a freaking ninja. Like when it all goes smoothly and you're like, I got up the tree smooth and didn't make a sound. And like, you get to that point, yep, where you do it a bunch and it's fun. Cause it's like what you want to be good at, you know?
Yeah. So what I've been trying to pay attention to over this last year is, you know, I think we talked last time, I just got into saddle hunting this year. Last year, so this past season was my second year filming now. So like that adds a whole nother aspect to setting up. If I didn't have the camera arms and all the wires and stuff like that, I would probably be set up in half the time. Yeah. So last year I was using a camera arm. I had bought a couple and I kind of took them apart and pieced them together with my own stuff, like try to make it lighter and stuff. And it worked pretty okay, but it was kind of heavy and kind of cumbersome. And it was kind of a bitch to like hang on the tree and stuff. So I made it a point this year that if I'm going to get any new piece of equipment, it's got to be a new camera arm. And I just ordered one. They were finally on sale. I am not sponsored, but Beast Gear has a camera arm, and right now they're on sale. Plus I'm a teacher, so I got a little bit extra off on the back end, which was nice. Shout out to them, because there aren't a whole lot of outdoors companies giving teachers discounts. So thank you, Beast Gear. But yeah, they have this awesome lightweight aluminum camera arm. I haven't even gotten it in the mail yet. I am dying to try that out. Heck, because I'm thinking it's going to cut about 5 pounds off of my back and speed up the process when I'm up in the tree. So hopefully it works out. I'm really excited.
You going to take it out for some practice squirrel hunts? Climb up in your saddle, sprinkle some corn around.
Well, listen, what I've noticed is if I'm walking through the woods and I'm trying to squirrel hunt, all I see are deer. But if I'm out deer hunting in a tree stand, all I see are squirrels. So all I got to do is get out there and act like I'm deer hunting, and I'll come home with a full backpack of squirrels and I could feed the family for a week.
Heck yeah.
You know, so we are in March, and I don't know what month turkey season opens up for you down there, or if it's similar to South Carolina. But for me in PA, New Jersey, and New York, I'm pretty sure they open up in May. Like New York season is all the month of May 1st to May 31st. When does the turkey season open up for you down there?
I'm pretty sure March 29th is when it opens. So
like
in a couple weeks, and I've got a couple spots I feel pretty good about.
All right.
Generally, turkey hunting is terrible at the places I deer hunt. But having hunted there enough for deer, I'm like, okay, I know where enough birds are that it's worth going. And there wasn't as much vegetation this year. Like, there was a big flood and vegetation actually didn't grow worth a shit this year. And I guess a bunch of turkeys moved in there, and they opened this county up for this area up for turkey hunting. So it's like first year it's been turkey hunted, and I know where there's turkeys there, and the vegetation's all gone. So like everything's lining up to make it worthwhile to go there.
And they've never heard a call in their life.
Yeah. But I much prefer to hunt turkeys in South Carolina. Like,
really? Better stock to hunt from, more reactive or interactive? What's the reason?
Yeah, there's just more birds there. They're pressured, they're tough easterns, but I've also, you know, hunted there long enough to know where there's a lot of birds. Like, last season that I hunted there, I limited out on birds on public land. Like, I shot three gobblers.
No shit.
So I'm going back there like the second week of April to take my nephews hunting. They've never been hunting, and I want to get them, you know, a good turkey hunting experience, get them fired up for it.
Yeah.
Kind of teach them public land ropes.
Boomstick?
Yeah, it'll be boomstick. I told you my thoughts on turkey hunting with them.
More people I talk to, I'm starting to think I might be crazy wanting to go out with the bow, but
I think in your scenario, it's fine. You know,
we'll see. I can't right now, the situation, the position we're in, I can't justify going out and buying a turkey choke on my shotgun, you know? So if a regular full choke isn't enough, then I might just have to go with the bow and try to take one, but we'll see. I'm excited.
Based on your scenario, I think you might as well go with the bow. So
right
in that, but run and gun, like everybody kind of has to do on public land. I think run and gun, you got to have a shotgun your first couple birds before going hardcore the bow.
Have you ever used any of those tom tails? You know, they have those tails that you could put on like your stabilizer, or, you know, on the barrel of your gun. Have you ever used one of them?
Not on the barrel of my gun. I mean, I've tried all the decoys, and then I got to the point where I sometimes will carry a hen decoy, but man, I just go out with a shotgun and a mouth call, really.
Okay.
Because I think I've got busted trying to set up the decoy and then carrying it around for, you know, 5 hours in the woods. I just kind of like to run and gun as light and fast as possible.
Mm-hmm. So growing up in Jersey, it's actually illegal to stalk turkey. It's pretty much like you got to post up and set up and sit your ass down and call them in. You know what I mean? There's no stalking. And I was always under the impression that it was from a safety standpoint. You can't wear orange when you're turkey hunting. You know what I mean? And, you know, if someone's got decoy set up and someone's not paying attention. What I always said is Jersey is the state of, we're going to keep you out of your own way, right? So, like, they make things illegal so you don't do something you shouldn't do, versus other states that are like, this is common sense. And, you know, if I'd let the powers that be, you know?
Like, yeah. Survival of the people who are not super dumb. Like, what is it? The Darwin Awards? Like,
yeah, exactly. The Darwin Awards. I've never heard that before.
You haven't?
I like that. Nah.
Look it up. It's kind of brutal. It's like people dying in the dumbest ways possible.
I've seen the TV show 1,000 Ways to Die. I don't know if you've ever seen that. Like,
it's similar. Yeah.
Okay. I think that's something I could get with. That's pretty funny.
Pretty amusing in a way.
So talk me through scouting for a turkey. Because so my thing is, and I'm trying to learn as much as I can in this short window of time before going out for turkey for the first time. And everyone I've been talking to kind of say that, you know, you can't really pattern a turkey. You know, like, you could go out and scout for deer and you could find deer trails and they're going to use the same trails all the time, whatever. But turkey isn't like that. So, but they're also tough to hunt. So my thing is, like, do you find a little bit of a sense of, almost like a weight off your shoulders, a little bit of less, what the hell is the word I'm thinking of? Like, not as, do you find it easier to turkey hunt or harder to turkey hunt? I can't figure out how to phrase the question I want to ask.
It's just, it's a nice reprieve from all the things that you're strict on yourself during deer season.
Mm-hmm.
Nice to throw some of those out the window and focus on some other things. Like with turkeys, eyesight's their main defense. So it's really annoying to like have to hold super still when you're sitting there. But you don't have to worry about smell. You don't have to worry about being in the spot on the spot 90% mm-hmm. of the hunt time. So it's not easier or harder. It's just different. But as far as scouting goes, I would say in patterning turkeys, man, you don't need to be on the spot, so you don't have to scout the trail. You just go out there, you you find turkey scratching, and like that's huge. Like, it's not like a buck where it's like, I mean, it could be, they could be 2 miles away, but your call also goes half a mile, mm-hmm. and you're also free to walk around miles and miles until you find them. And so if you find scratching in an area, that's a big deal, at least when I hunt and where I hunt. Find scratching, you're like, okay, there are turkeys here, confirmed, most important thing. And then the other thing is, like, my most successful seasons is you, a month before the season, whenever you have an evening off, go out in the evening to where you think your best chance of hearing a turkey from is, and go owl hoot on the edge of a ridge where you can just hear a long way over a river bottom, because turkeys like to roost over water, you know? So mm-hmm. you get on topo maps and you're like, where in the area is there like this river system that creates maybe flooding, or maybe it's just always a lot of water?
Or like a stream type of deal?
Stream, bigger the better. The more water, the better in a wooded area. More woods, the better. The more water in a stream river scenario, the better. And just go listen, like go owl hoot right at dark and just owl hoot your brains out. And you might not hear one every time, but man, if you hear one, you're like, boom, I'm going to kill a turkey here this season. It's like, then you know where you got a spot. All you need is like 3 to 5 spots and you got a good turkey season on your hands. You're like, I heard a turkey here, I'm going to go in that area. And that will unlock like more turkey areas, right? Because you're going to mm-hmm. go hunt the area you heard them. And then you're going to find an evening during turkey season to listen for more. So you're
and like hear them in different places, like, you know, you get into the woods, maybe it's another, you know, 100, 200 yards a little bit further and so on.
And they will be there. Like the turkey I shot in Texas, actually another turkey hunter shot that one. I shot them, but that was brutal. I was literally calling this turkey in and I hear boom, but good for you. But I heard him in a tree 3 weeks before the season. I didn't have a chance to come back. Opening morning, I went there and he was in the same area gobbling. I was like, game on, you know, before daylight. Mm-hmm. So if you find a turkey gobbling in the evening and you come back 3 weeks later, like there's a great chance he will be there. It's not like the deer thing.
Okay. So I'm going to give you a scenario, because we've had a friend of the channel, Kevin Creeley, has been on a couple times. And last time he was on, we talked about like turkey hunting for the absolute beginner, never stepped foot in the turkey woods before. And we talked a lot about if you owl hoot or you croak, whatever, if you could roost a turkey the night before, like you're in the chips, you have a good place to start. Now, what happens if you get to a patch of woods where you know there's turkey, you've seen them before, you know that there's turkey there to hunt, but you haven't roosted one and you're calling in the morning and you just can't get one to call back? Now, you're not going to hunt a roosted turkey, or you're not walking towards the sound of a turkey that you know is there. You're kind of out there blindly hunting for a while. Mm-hmm. How would you handle something like that?
My motto with turkey hunting is hunt, find the turkey that wants to die. So like, if I don't hear a turkey, but I know there's turkeys around, I'm just going to keep walking, because I choose mm-hmm. areas where I can walk miles and miles and miles. So I walk and I call, you know, every 150 yards, and it might be hours, unfortunately, but that's like turkey hunting sometimes on public land and pressured areas. And then I find one that gobbles, and they don't. You might have some days where you don't find one that gobbles and you try that, but like more times than not, like you just walk until you find one that will gobble back. And that's the turkey that wants to die, because when there's other turkeys hearing you probably, but that one's like extra worked up. Mm-hmm. That's the one that wants to die. And so you might find him at 10, 11 in the morning. He might not want to come in. And then you say, I'm going to go get some lunch. This is another nice thing you can do with turkeys that you can't do as much with deer. Like, I'm going to go get some lunch and I'm just going to come back at 2:30 and kill him at 3. Like, because there's something about that 1 to 3 window where and this is kind of a rule of thumb with turkey hunting. I've been told this and found it be true, where if a turkey gobbles at you in the afternoon, that is a super killable bird. So like, okay, they're just extra alone because the hens have gone to lay eggs and they don't have other turkeys around or other hens around usually at that time of day. They're just extra susceptible to being like, oh, there's a hen over there that wants to, you know, get frisky. This is I got to take advantage of this. And they're much more killable then.
See, that's really interesting, because where I've grown up and I've expanded into New York, we're not allowed to hunt past noon. Noon is our cutoff mm-hmm. for turkey.
I've heard about that.
You know, so he's like, yeah, you know, my parents read me a fable at one time that had that in it, you know.
I have heard, yeah, that's actually not super uncommon, I don't think, with turkey meat.
No, I've heard that. I think it's the same thing down in Virginia, I think. Don't quote me on that, but we're pretty
never run into.
We're pretty much restricted to the morning, which is really unfortunate because deer hunting I could do after work. Turkey hunting I can't, so now I'm restricted to only Saturdays because you can't hunt Sundays in Pennsylvania, you know. So it's like New York, at least I could go for the weekend. I can go Friday night, I can hunt Saturday morning, Sunday morning, be out of the woods by noon, have some lunch with the family, and then hit the road and be home in time to grocery shop for the week, you know. So it's like
it cuts it in half of what you're able to, how much you're able to get after them. But regardless, I would say find the turkey that wants to die and just keep walking till one gobbles back. And you're, if, you know, if you happen to, not you specifically, but if somebody happens to be terrible at calling, make sure you're practicing calling like a lot and find a call that works for you. If it's a slate call, those are super easy. But find the turkey that wants to die. And while you're walking around out there, you're going to be scouting. Only, I would say, hack for scouting is walking. Walking creeks, like smaller creeks, or where you can see tracks easily. Turkeys are always leaving tracks there.
Yeah, and so, their feet are massive.
Yeah, you can see, okay, that's a pretty fresh track. Like, there's turkeys in the area, and then you're in a good area, and, you know, get in early enough to hear if they're gobbling that morning.
Okay. Now, I don't know. I know we talked about this earlier. I don't remember if it was like while we were actually live recording or not. So if it is, I'm just going to repeat myself. Today, actually, on my way home, I went out and bought my very first mouth call ever. I've never had one in my mouth. So it's like, it took me like a solid 15 minutes to figure out how to get it to make noise. Like, I'm flipping it around my mouth and like trying to figure it out. And then I finally, because, you know, stubborn me, who the fuck reads direction, you know? So finally I succumbed and I was like, screw it, I'll read it. And they were like, just say Chuck. I said, oh, okay. You know?
Yeah.
So I threw it in. At first, it was super rough, you know, and now I can't. I mean, I've only been using it for a day and I can't make the same awful sounds I was making at first anymore. Mm-hmm. So I'm starting to get the hang of it. And I feel like if I could just do like the soft little, like the soft clucks and then the hard cuts, I don't know. I feel like that's enough for me to get going.
Totally. Especially like early morning, like all you need to do is make some soft ones, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes later in the day or later in the morning, sometimes you have to throw out like a real aggressive, excited call to get one to gobble back.
Mm-hmm.
But in the morning, you know, it's just the, and it can work like a charm. That's the only noise you might need to make the whole time.
Yeah. It's going to have to be like deer. I'm just going to have to get out in the woods and I'm going to have to call it some turkey and I'm going to have to see what works and what doesn't. And I'm sure I'm going to make some mistakes, you know, but, we'll see. If I can get a turkey to call back, then my odds will be better because it took me a very, very long time to figure out how to call deer in, you know, so.
And we'll have to reconnect on this, with your turkey hunting experience, but it's the only animal where I've experienced the anger emotion when hunting.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, spill this one.
Well, it's just because it's like you get so frustrated with how many miles you walk. It can be hot. And you're like, I'm doing all this for a stupid bird, but I'm addicted to it. I can't help it. And there's like this phrase, I think, that I don't know if it's like super widespread, but people will be like, I'm mad at them. And I'm like, that's the only game animal I've experienced. Like, I'm pissed at you and I want to kill you. They shouldn't be, you know, it's like, I'm pissed.
I'm mad at you and I want to kill you. That's it. We're talking about a bird. All good.
I'm pissed at you and I want to kill you. But I'm also like enjoying the beauty of nature and the hunt. And like it, but it's the only time I've experienced anger. And so if you have that thought creep in your head while you're out there, let me know and just text me. Be like, I'm mad at him, Ben. I'm mad at him.
I get it. You're not psychotic. I don't have to call for help. We're good. That's awesome.
I'm a psychotically addicted to hunting.
If there was one piece of advice you had to give to a brand new turkey hunter, what would it be?
One piece of, listen to as many turkey hunting podcasts as you possibly can, because then you'll learn more things than I can tell you in one.
To hear what? What are you listening for specifically? Like, if someone, like, because we've all experienced it, there's so much content out there that sometimes it's like, you know, their counter opinions, or people, this person says do this and that person says don't do it. So if there's someone new who just wants to start figuring it out,
Yeah.
Should they be listening for when they're listening to some of these new podcasts?
Yeah. It's not as complicated as deer hunting with, there's like some basic things. And once you learn them, you get the gist. And then from there, you get better at calling. So for instance, if I'm hunting early season, I'm going to look up podcasts on my way there that say tips on early season calling for turkeys or finding a gobbler early season. If it's late season, I type in late season. If I'm going in the afternoon, I type in afternoon. And then you're headed to the woods with like a plan in your mind for here's what the pros have said about turkey hunting. And I actually have not come across much bad advice for turkey hunting on YouTube.
Okay.
There's some seriously OG dudes out there. Mossy Oak, The Hunting Public. There's not a ton of bad advice on turkey hunting. And that's weird for me to say, but I think if you hear it by an OG older dude on YouTube, you're probably getting some good information.
All right. I gotcha. Now we're at about an hour and 10 minutes here. We've kind of talked the hunting thing, your favorite tactic. We've talked the turkey thing, your favorite tactic. Break down an elk hunt for me. If there was, we don't have the time to like get into like super deep, you know, elk tactics. And we talked last time, it's like the 10 percenter, you know, you hunt for 10 years, you know, hope to shoot one elk type of thing. What if there was a elk that you have in mind that is like your favorite story to tell? Tell us the story and then kind of talk about, I guess, the tactics or how you went about hunting and harvesting that elk.
Yeah, probably most memorable hunt is for this big giant bull that we call Blackie, and he got killed, and I think he ended up scoring 353, which is really big in that unit. But we didn't kill him on this hunt, but very memorable for us. Basically, bed to food scenario. And elk hunting is like a mixture, this amazing epic adventure of like turkey hunting on steroids mixed with, you know, deer a little bit with the feed and all that. But okay, so you get up in the morning and you get out there early enough to hear calling because elk love to bugle at daylight, and then you can get located on them. Then you're moving in as fast as possible. That's why I say it's like turkey hunting, because you're locating right at daybreak and you're moving fast. And then you're chasing these elk because they're headed from the bottom of the mountain to safety in their bedding area, maybe a mile up the mountain. And you have to be in physical enough condition to stay close enough to piss that bull off, because you're pretending to be a competitor satellite bull. Like, hey, I want some of your cows. Mm-hmm. And that bull's got all his cows under his authority. And literally that's how they operate, is like, if they're in the bull's harem, they do what he says. They really don't operate out of that to like a crazy degree. Like, even if they see you moving in, they kind of wait on the bull's cue to say, what do we do in this situation?
That's really cool. I didn't know that.
It's wild. And another thing about it is like, it's like turkey hunting with the calling, but their language is so much more advanced than turkey.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they have little noises that mean little different things. And when you learn that, you can escalate your elk hunting big time. But yeah, you're chasing these elk up the mountain, pretending to be a competitor bull. And your goal is to piss this bull off enough to come back and kick your ass. And then you shoot him. And so you'll get in a scenario where you're chasing all the elk up the mountain. You finally piss him off. He runs back down the mountain to fight you, like a giant elk battle. But yeah, this one hunt, everything was perfect. Like, we chased him up the mountain and he finally decided to make his stand. And he was furious, just like bugling insanely. And like, they have a different bugle when they get to that level of anger. It's like, you feel it from like a long way off. And we're sitting there in the short aspen, little miniature aspen groves. And we see just this bigger cedar tree just going. I mean, it's a 20-foot tall tree and it's just being shaken like a rag doll just. And my buddy goes towards him to keep him in the, to kind of pretend to be the bull. And I'm supposed to sneak around to the side, and I'm sneaking through the little aspen grove. And right when I get to where I can kind of see his antlers, and like, maybe I'm 60 yards away, you know, 10 yards from making a shot in a clearing, all hell breaks loose. And I guess they winded us or something, and they all go running up off the mountain. And there were other hunters around. We don't know if they caused that. But even though it wasn't like a successful story, I guess the cool thing about elk hunting is that you have a fair amount of those interactions that are like huge adrenaline dumps, and you didn't even kill the thing, and it was still the most amazing experience you've ever had in the woods. And that's elk hunting.
I mean, just listening to that story, like, it's like, I felt my blood pressure starting to rise. That's freaking awesome. Like, I didn't
feel that bugle in your chest, like a, you know, like a, if you're sitting next to a drummer, the bass and the drum, you feel it in your body. Like a bull's bugle will do that. Like if you're close enough and they're mad enough.
That's incredible. See, I didn't know. I never understood that aspect of it. I didn't realize, like, I guess I should have, because you kind of do the same thing with a buck, you know, with like a snort wheeze and stuff like that. But like, is that why the elk always, like, there's always, you can see like the snot coming out of their nose and like, you know, they're just like a bull, like coming in. Like, dude, I just thought that was just because of how muscular they were. I didn't realize they were coming in to like scrap.
Oh, they're coming in to kill the other one. Like, they are coming in to do battle for sure. It's incredible because it's just so intense and they're huge.
That's awesome. I love that. I've never, not now, now I want to go elk hunting. Now I got to figure out how to convince the wife to let me go to Colorado or something. Well, not Colorado anymore, but somewhere.
I think I might've told you, but I told my wife on our first or second date, I said, you got to know two things about me. I'm going to elk hunt in Colorado for 2 weeks every year, and I'm going to live on a farm. And those are the goals.
Are you on a, well, I know you already hunt. I already know you elk hunt for two weeks every year. Have you found your way to a farm yet?
No, we need this. We need this music to become popular.
All right. So let's see if we can get the listeners to bring it into whatever state they're listening from.
Yes.
Rainy Days, Ben Coleman, Rainy Days, iTunes. Check it out.
Thank you.
Great song.
And you'll be invited when I get the farm.
Hell yeah. I'll come do all the TSI work for you. How about that?
I don't know. Timber or something?
Timber stand improvement.
Love it.
Absolutely. Hinge cutting and hack and squirt and girdle. And we'll do the whole nine. Set up bedding areas and food plots. Honestly, I think it might even be easier in Texas than what I'm used to. Like, where we got our property, there's snow on the ground into like late April. I'm not even kidding. That you can find pockets of snow. It can still snow. Our ground, I was there this past weekend. You have 3 inches of mud and then just a solid sheet of ice. Like, I literally kicked my boot into the mud and then hit the ice and my boot slipped.
Recently?
So it's like, yeah. Like, this past weekend. It's March 18th. We were there 2 days ago.
Yeah, all these things out here already are green. They've got like 6 inches of weed in them. That's like beautiful.
Nope. Around us here in PA, you know, you're starting to see some green come up. The forest hasn't started to leaf out yet. So I still have a little bit of time to do some, you know, pre-leaf out scouting and stuff like that. But our property just gives a lot of obstacles, you know, because of the late thaw. We can't bring like a side-by-side into our fields until May, June, which means when it comes time for me to do any spraying or planting or fertilizing, it's all done by hand, you know, with a hand spreader and a push spreader or whatever the case is, you know. So if I could get shit to grow here, I feel like if somehow I'm fortunate in the future to get my own piece, I know not to get something that's at, you know, 2,000 feet elevation. I need to get something that's a little bit lower that thaws out a lot sooner, you know. And, you know, we're testing stuff out here. I'm throwing shit at the wall and we're seeing if it sticks.
On the flip side of that, like being in a colder climate, those deer need that more in the late season. So it's more of a draw. Whereas here they're like, you know, late season, it's like 40 degrees. They're like, I'll just wait till dark before I start moving to the field out there.
Yeah, that's fair. You know, and knowing that the forest around us isn't exactly kept up very well, you know, so there's not a lot of green for them to eat in the winter. It's all woody browse and, you know, trying to eat shoots and stuff, just trying to make it through, you know. So that does kind of give us the upper hand where if we're able to throw some trees over and have some fresh growth coming in, that maybe they'll be attracted to coming to our property more because it's got more of what they need. You know, that's kind of like the long-term plan, but it's coming together little by little. We're having a good time.
I'm excited to keep up with your TSI work and your arrows and your podcast. You got a bunch of stuff going on.
Oh yeah, dude. We got a little bit of everything and you know, hopefully everything has its place and there's a place for everything and you know, they could all flourish on their own one by one. We're gonna have to have you up at the property one of these days. Next time you come up, you know, we got Steve over in Jersey and we can get together and do a little kumbaya and it'll be a good time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So is there anything that you were looking forward to sharing that maybe we didn't get to today, or any last piece of advice that you want to give to, you know, anyone starting out or trying a new piece of land out?
Man, just stay fired up about it and get out there as much as possible. But no, today was a great conversation, man. I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. And, you know, for those of listeners who decided to listen to this one first, can you just reiterate where they could find you, hear some of your music, see some of your hunting adventures, your music adventures?
Yeah, Instagram's my main spot that I post regularly. So it's Ben Coleman Music. And then you can find me on Apple, Spotify, all those places, website, Ben Coleman Official. But yeah, just would appreciate anybody listening to my music. And I got Rainy Days out on the radio in Texas right now. So that's kind of a new cool thing for me.
All right. And he's got the little blue check next to his name. So when you find his page, you'll know it's him.
You know, follow me so I can get to 10,000 followers. So I don't have to pay for that anymore.
Okay. Oh, is that it? You get to 10,000. You don't need to pay for it anymore?
I think that's what it is. 10,000. Yeah. And then I don't have to pay Apple $16 a month.
Well, shit, get me to 10,000 too.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Well, you know, I got to be honest, man. It's I find this with teaching a lot. I'm not a huge fan of talking about myself or promote. Like, I like to share stories, but I'm not a huge fan of sitting here and be like, I can do this, this, and this, and I'm good at that. You know, it's so awkward for me. It really is. So when I tell my listeners, I hope you found value in this conversation. Like, I genuinely mean it. You know, like, we're having a great time doing this, and luckily, I'm fortunate enough that the Instagram channel has been growing pretty steadily over the last month or two. You know, so anyone who's listening and following on Instagram, like, I just want to thank you like so much for that, because that's big to me. Like, I'm enjoying talking about this stuff, and you guys are enjoying it enough to say, you know what, I want to hear more of this. You know, so if you enjoy it, all I ask is that you're willing to share it with a friend of yours. Maybe, you know, there's something that you think they could hear, or maybe it's like, you know, I agree with something that you say and your buddy kind of has like a counter opinion. You know, you can be like, see, you're not the only one who thinks this way, you know. But whatever the case is, I want to thank you so much for tuning in every week and listening to this podcast. It really means a lot. If you like what you've heard, if you found some value in this, like I said, share it with a friend, leave a review. 5-star review goes a long way for us. And if you leave a written review down there on iTunes, that also goes a really long way for us as well. I'm trying to figure out something that I can give you guys when you leave me a review, like a little bit of, like a thank you or a token of my appreciation. I just haven't come up with anything yet. So if you guys could think of anything and just leave that in your comment, like, that'd be great. I'm open to some ideas. You know, and if there's anything that you want to hear us talk about, or anyone you think would be a good fit for the podcast here, I'm open to suggestions or recommendations or anything like that. We're going into April here. A lot of you guys are going to be doing turkey, but at the same time, this is TSI season. Who knows where the next few months are taking me? And honestly, there's a good chance that 30 days from now, I'm going to be a dad for the first time. So it's like,
let's go.
It's crazy times. You know, I don't know what the future brings, but it's bright. I'm excited. I'm blessed. I'm thankful. And I want to thank you for joining us here this week again for part two. We'd love to have you back at some time, and anything we can do to help support your music, man, just let me know. And, you know, we'll definitely link up. Absolutely. So
thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So until next time, thanks again for joining us here for another episode of the Wing and Tail Boys podcast. And until next week, remember, success is just a commitment away. Have a great week, ladies and gentlemen.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as three suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.